But before we look at that, let's look at the order in which he judged these nations. He began down here in Egypt. There's Egypt down here, and the first one was against Egypt. Then the second was up here against this little country here, Philistia. Here the Philistines. Over here is Moab, the river Arnon and the brook Zered. Then Moab, he turned to Moab. Then from Moab up here to Ammon, and that's up here about, well, above this, in depth, somewhere along about here. He came back down to Edom and judged Edom. From there, he moved on up here to Damascus and Kedar. Kedar was out here east of Damascus. Then from there, he judged Edom, Elam rather. Elam was up here at the head of the Persian Gulf, in the Persian Gulf. Then from Edom, he moved on up here to Babylon. Babylon here, the river flowed into this here. And here's Babylon here. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This one's on the Orm, this stuff. Kedar, Damascus, Babylon. Oh, no, that's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Now that's like 9. The 9 of them. But what interested me was he began here with this great power, world power here, and he ended with this great world power up here. And he has 7 in between. 7 between Egypt and Babylon, and that would be the Philistia, Moab, Ammon, Edom, Damascus, Kedar here, and then Elam down here and Babylon to the north. We covered Egypt a Sunday before last. We covered Moab last Sunday. Now we turn now to Ammon, and remember that Moab and Ammon, the Moabites and Ammonites, were descendants of Lot. Therefore they were kinsmen to the Jews, to the Israelites. He's already, so he doesn't mention the judgment of Judah. He's been talking about that all the time. He's talking about that all through his book. Now all these other nations, all these heathen nations, pagan nations, they're going to suffer judgment also. Now Jeremiah followed a similar pattern. Isaiah from chapter 13 through 23, he had 10 heathen nations and Judah. Then in chapters 24 and 27, he there dealt with a world judgment. Now Jeremiah is 100 years or more later. So now then he's still talking about the judgment of these nations. It's going to come at the hands of Babylon. Then God will ultimately judge Babylon. So all the heathen nations are going to go down. And that's an interesting thing, that God's going to destroy all these heathen nations. He's going to also execute judgment upon his. And all of that is against idolatry. It's against the idol, the empty gods of mankind. God is going to demonstrate the fact that he is the one and only God. He's in absolute control of all things. So the destiny of nations does not rest upon their gods, but it rests upon God. God will be the executor, executor, and executor of these nations. All right, now let's notice now, we turn to Ammon. We've had Egypt, Philistia, and Moab. Now it turns to Ammon. Are the children of Ammon, thus saith Jehovah, hath Israel no sons, hath he no heir? Why then doth Malcolm, that's for their king, or their god, both the god was their king, and the king was also called Malcolm. Why then doth Malcolm possess Gad, and his people dwell in the city thereof? Now the point is that this land possessed by the Edomite, by the Ammonites here, this land, they come on down to possess all of this land down to here. Right, now that was God's land. That was the land of God's people. Now the point is, doesn't God have any heirs to dwell in this land? Had been taken away by Ammon. Ammon had taken away that which belonged to him. Now remember, when the children of Israel came up here to possess this land, God did not allow them to take the land of Moab or the Ammonites or the Edomites, because these were kinsmen to the Jews. But later on now, the Moabites became a bitter enemies, and the Ammonites took this land here that belonged to the land of Gad, that belonged here to the Reuben and the half tribe of Manasseh there, took that land for themselves and drove them out. I believe that it is Amos here that makes the statement I want to note. Yes, look at Amos 1 and verse 13. Now here you have the cruelty of these Ammonites. Thus saith Jehovah, for three transgressions of the children of Ammon, yea, for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have ripped up the women with child, Gilead, the child of Gilead, that they may enlarge their border. But I will kindle a fire in the wall of Rabbah, and that was the capital, and it shall devour the palaces thereof. The shouting in the day of battle, with a tempest in the day of the whirlwind, that's the cyclone, the tornado, and their king shall go into captivity, he and his princes together, said Jehovah. Now remember, Amos prophesied back about 755. We're down now at about 600, around there. And so, for over 100 years ago, God, they were cruel then. And God said they would go in, and here we were, a woman with child, they would rip her up, watch the fetters fall on the ground there, and acted extreme cruelty. Right in that. And so God says here then that his people shall dwell in the city thereof. Therefore, behold, the day has come, such your hour will cause an alarm of war to be heard against Rabbah of the children of Ammon, and it shall become a desolate heap. And her daughters, now that's the Rabbah was the capital. These are the smallest cities throughout the land of Ammon. And I'm talking about women, talking the daughter cities of Ammon, shall be burned with fire. Then shall Israel possess them that did possess him, said Jehovah. Wail, O Heshbon, as one of the cities, for Ai, I don't know where that was located. There's an Ai across the river, but this is not the one he's talking about. The Ai that the Jews took when they first went into the land. This is not it. Ai is laid waste. Cry, ye daughters of Rabbah. Gird you with sackcloth. Lament and run to and fro among the fences. For Malcolm shall go into captivity, his priests and his princes together. Now, what are you talking about, Malcolm, the god? But it really means his king. So the prophet is talking about the king and his princes and his people, but of course Malcolm, the god, will go with them. So they both fall. Wherefore gloriest thou in the valleys, thy flowing valleys, O backsliding daughter, that trustest in her treasures, saying, who shall come unto me? Who's going to take me? And here the Ammonites, like the Moabites, remember last Sunday we pointed out the pride of the Moabites. The Moab is very proud, or so were the Ammonites. Pride goeth before destruction, the haughty spirit before fall. That always comes when they get too haughty. Who shall come unto me? Behold, that's what she said. Behold, I will bring a fear upon thee, saith the Lord Jehovah of hosts, from all that aroused around about thee, and you shall be driven out every man right forth, and there shall be none to gather. Therefore the fugitives, to gather the fugitives. But afterward I will bring back the captivity of the children of Ammon, saith Jehovah. Now we had that same thought down here about Moab. In verse 47, yet shall I bring back the captivity of Moab in the latter days, saith Jehovah. Thus far is the judgment of God. Now, the latter days always referred to the messianic period. Right, so we're going to God will send the gospel to them as well as others. Now, how many of these were still living, and how many of them obeyed the gospel, or who carried it to them? I don't know. But God said He's going to give them an opportunity through the gospel, so I know that He did. I know that He did. All right. Now, some of those might have been now on the day of Pentecost. I don't know. All right. So that's the prophecy of the Ammonites. Now he moves from the Ammonites down to Edom now. So Edom here is to the south. Now Edom, the descendant of Esau, and Esau was the brother of Jacob. So here the Edomites and the Moabites and the Ammonites were all kinsmen to the Jews. I guess that's why they didn't get along very well. They were kin to each other. All right, but anyway, now he comes back now down here to Edom, south of the Dead Sea. Here's the Dead Sea. Right here, and here's Edom to the south here, coming out something like that. Right here, the little river, Brook Zered, near the river Arnon, which was north and south of Border Moab. Here was the sea to the west, and here was the Arabian Desert to the east. So that meant then that Moab had been pretty well protected from invasion by others until God decreed their destruction by Nebuchadnezzar. He began it, and never ultimately completed. All right, any question on that? But God controls the destiny of nations. That's taught all the way through the Old Testament. God doesn't change. Now, of Edom, thus says Jehovah of hosts, is wisdom no more in Teman? Now, Teman was one of the chief cities. There were two different cities of Teman. That was one up here somewhere in the northern part. Then there was another about 225 miles south. I'm sure he was talking about this one. Teman and Bozrah. Bozrah was the capital, probably down here about here somewhere. But Teman was a chief city. Bozrah was a capital. And God's going to destroy the Edomites. Now the Edomites had been well protected. I know you've seen pictures, and I don't remember 10 or 15 years ago, National Geographic dedicated a large article with a lot of pictures of those of Petra. Now, you're coming south here. You come up, there was a Petra here, was a fortress down here, and it came through a narrow cliffs here on each side, about several hundred feet high, and just a couple of horses could come along here together. So you could take a handful of people and put them in a strategic place there and protect the city. That Petra was that place where back in the limestone they carved out those beautiful buildings back in there. You've seen pictures out of my note. And one of them was a treasure, the other king, had the several of you. That's one place I've always wanted to go. We'll never get to go there, but I've always wanted to see old Petra to the south there. That was our stronghold. I did hear a man lecture one time who discovered the high place of Petra. He was the one that went in and discovered, the archaeologist, they discovered the high place there. But I'd love to see that if I ever could get down there to it. But anyhow, we'll move on from that. That's a part of the Ammonites. Now, the Ammonites, let me say, I'll get to that in just a moment. Now, he goes on to talk about others. You have Edom. Here, first of all, Teman here. That's one of the chief cities of it. I think a capital at one time. Dedan was another one. Dwell in the depths, old inhabitants of Dedan. For I will bring the calamity of Esau upon him, the town that I shall visit him. An interesting thing that I've mentioned to you before, in reading and studying the 34th chapter of Isaiah, where he describes the land of Edom, you'll notice that he talks about the unclean animals, the unclean birds, and the streams running with pitch and brimstone, all of which was figurative language of the emptiness of anything alive in the land of Edom. It symbolizes the world. The world is life in the evil one. Those in the world are dead spiritually. So Edom symbolized the death of the world and the worldly people. And how the God was going to bring it to a complete end. I'll notice that in a moment. Now notice, if grape gatherers came to thee, would they not have some gleaning grapes? If thieves by night, would they not destroy it till they had enough? But I have made Esau bare. I have uncovered his secret places, and he shall not be able to hide himself. His seed is destroyed, and his brethren and his neighbors, and he is not. Right? Turn with me now to the little book of Obadiah. Obadiah was a judgment against the Edomites, and you will notice now, and that's one reason I think Obadiah was one of the earliest of the books. And I think that both Jeremiah and I believe it's Ezekiel that followed said some of the same things here. Looking at Obadiah, if you'll find it here in just a second. Obadiah. Now, note what he says here, beginning with verse 5. If thieves came to thee, if robbers by night, how art thou cut off? Would they not steal only till they had enough? If grape gatherers came to thee, would they not leave some gleaning grapes? How are the things that Esau searched? How are his hidden treasures sought out? All the men of his confederacy have brought thee on thy way, even to the borders. The men that were at peace with thee have deceived thee, and they prevailed against thee. They that eat thy bread lay a snare unto thee. There is no understanding in him. All right, but you'll notice here, he mentions here, the things searched out here, and the great thieves that go into the orchard, they would leave a few gleaning grapes, but there'll not be anything left of Edom. Now, he's also mentioned in the last book of the Old Testament, turn to the book of Malachi, and here God begins the book of Malachi, talking about him. Now, note here, beginning with verse 2, I have loved you, saith Jehovah. Now, this is the last Old Testament book, of course. Yet you say, wherein hast thou loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother? I said, Jehovah. Yet I loved Jacob, but Esau I hated. And he loved him less. He was an idolater. And made his mountains desolation, and gave his heritage to the jackals of the wilderness, unclean animals. Whereas Edom saith, we are beaten down, but we will return and build the waste places. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, they shall build, but I will throw down. Men shall call them the border of wickedness, and the peoples against whom Jehovah hath indignation forever. And your eyes shall see, and you shall say, Jehovah be magnified beyond the border of Israel. For there's the prophecy of his total destruction. I want to look at Obadiah once more there, if I may. Here in Obadiah, look at verse 2 and 3. Behold, I have made thee small among the nations. Thou art greatly despised. And here's one of the most eloquent statements found anywhere. The pride of thy heart hath deceived thee, O thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, that saith in his heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? Though thou mount on high as the eagle, though thy nest be set among the stars, I will bring thee down from thence, saith Jehovah. You can't find any more eloquent, majestic statement anywhere than that one. Though you mount on high as the eagle, set thy nest among the stars, I will bring thee down from thence, saith Jehovah. No nation can climb so high in his pride and power, but what God can bring it down. All right, so those are, and as I said to you before, in reading these prophecies, the thought occurred to me, why does God say so much about Edom in the prophets? There must be a lesson there. It must signify something. What is it? Turn with me to Isaiah. We're not in a hurry to get through this book. Let's turn to Isaiah, the 34th chapter here. 35th is what it says here. Drop down to about, verse 4. No, let's start with verse 1. Come near, you nations, to hear and hearken, you people. Let the earth hear and the fullness thereof, the world and all things that come forth from it. For Jehovah hath indignation against all the nations, and wrath against all their host. He hath utterly destroyed them. He hath delivered them to the slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and the stench of their dead bodies shall come up, and the mountain shall be melted with our blood. Now that, of course, is a hyperbole. Now, and I said, and all the hosts of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fade away, as the leaf falleth from the vine, and as a fading leaf from the fig tree. Now that's expressive of the passing of their heavens and earth. Now that's not the end of the world, God, that we think about. That the end of a nation is brought to an end, its heavens are rolled away, in other words, it ceases to exist. Now notice further. Now I turn to Edom. When he goes on to say, for my sword hath drunk its fill in heaven, behold, it shall come down upon Edom and upon the people of my curse to judgment. Now Edom, it's a prophecy in all the nations. But it's especially against Edom that will stand for all the world and nations. All the heathen nations we were represented in Edom here. Now it goes on. The sword of Jehovah is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, with blood of lambs and goats, with the fat and the kidneys of rams. For Jehovah hath a sacrifice in Bozrah, that's the capital of Edom, and a great slaughter in the land of Edom. God's going to sacrifice them. God's going to destroy them, bring them to an end. And the wild oxen shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls, and their land shall be drunken with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. Now the clean animals will be used, will be a sacrifice unto Jehovah. Now notice what he talks about next now. For Jehovah hath a day of vengeance, a year of recompense for the cause of Zion. And the streams of Edom shall be turned into pitch, and the dust thereof into brimstone. And the land thereof shall become burning pitch, and it shall not be quenched night nor day as an unquenchable fire. The smoke thereof shall go up forever. From generation to generation it shall be waste, it shall lie waste, none shall pass through it forever and ever. But the pelican and the porcupine shall possess it, and the owl and the raven shall dwell in therein, and he will stretch over it the line of confusion and the plummet of emptiness. Now in contrast to God's kingdom, God said, I'll lay in Zion a foundation, and I'll make justice the line, and righteousness the plummet thereof. Now this one is going to be confusion and destruction here, confusion and emptiness over this one. So it moves on here then. I know the unclean animals and unclean birds, they shall call the nobles thereof to the kingdom, but none shall be there. All its princes shall be nothing. And thorns shall come up in the palaces, nettles and thistles in the fortresses thereof. And it shall be a habitation of jackals, a court for ostriches. Now all of that is an unclean animal, unclean birds there in it. And its streams will be running with pitch, and its dust will be brimstone. You can't imagine a more desolate, forsaken land than that, can you? All right? And the wild beasts of the desert shall meet with the wolves, and the wild goat shall cry to his fellow, Yea, the night monster, Lilith, whatever that is, shall settle there, and shall find her a nest of rest. There shall the dart snake make her nest, and lay and hatch, and gather under her shade. Yea, there shall the kites be gathered, every one with her mate. Now, seek ye out of the book of Jehovah and read. No one of these shall be missing, none shall want her mate. For my mouth hath commanded, and his spirit it hath gathered them. And he hath cast the lot for them, and his hand hath divided it unto them by line. They shall possess it forever. From generation to generation shall they dwell therein. Now you just sometime take your time and read that carefully. Everything that pertains to the unclean, that's the symbol. Now here are the nations. Now Eden symbolizes the nations, the realm of idolatry, of the world rather. So Eden is a symbol of the world, empty and void of all spiritual matters. Think about that. All right, now here, oh, against it, the next chapter is Israel, actually. They're the spiritual in chapter 35. That's the spiritual. Here he's contrasting the world with its emptiness of anything good with the spiritual over here from which all good comes. Now give that a little thought. Has the world, the land, the world of the ungodly, has that ever provided anything of a spiritual nature or that was good? Now just look at the world that we're living in today. Men of the world, the people of the world, the politicians of the world, the doctors of the world, all of these. Has any good thing of a spiritual nature come from any of them? Whatever was good or spiritual came from God through Israel, through the Christ. All that we have in this country that's good and worthwhile, I'm talking about spiritually now, morally. I'm not talking about materially. All of that has come from God through Christ. Think of all of the evil that's in the world today. That comes from what source? That comes from the world of the unregenerate, the world of the ungodly. And I mentioned before, and since Ruby is my typist and she's kind of helping me put these things together, talk to her about it. When I finish the book, I'm on now. I'm not going to try to write another book, another long book. But I might write a little short book on the Edomites, because I've never read one on the Edomites, as a symbol of the world. But when you take Isaiah 32, you take Jeremiah, you're going over to Amos, you're going over to Malachi, and you go to all the others there that have mentioned Edom. What does Edom represent? It always symbolizes the world of the non-spiritual, the world of the unregenerate, the world of the ungodly, the world of the wicked, always. Not one good thing is ever provided for an all. Now think about this passage. John says the whole world lieth in the evil one. That's the place to begin. All right, if the whole world lieth in the evil one, then what good has ever come from the evil one? What good is good has ever come from the children of the evil one? Now, I think that something ought to be written on that. I never have read anything on that, but the Lord bless me to live, and I get through this book, I'm going to write a little short booklet on it, just go through and take those up, and what Edom represents there, in contrast with what we have. All right. So here you're talking now about the gleaning of grapes there. Thieves of the night should destroy till they had enough there, but I have made Esau bare. I have uncovered his secret places, and he shall not be able to hide himself. His seed is destroyed, and his brethren and his neighbors, and he is not. Leave thy fatherless children. I will preserve them alive, and let thy widows trust in me. The only one, and nothing that Edom stands for or possesses, her gods, And you don't find the gods of the Edomites mentioned but once or twice. I've searched that, and I think about twice, once or twice, the only time that god's ever mentioned. So she was not, Edom was a descendant of Esau, was not a spiritually religious people. They were strictly of the world. Well, all right. For thus saith Jehovah, behold, they to whom it pertaineth not to drink of the cup shall surely drink. That is, that's the cup of God's wrath, the cup of judgment. They say, no, we're not going to drink of that cup. But God said they shall surely drink of it. Why? Because God's going to judge them. And art thou he that shall altogether go unpunished? Thou shalt not go unpunished, but thou shalt surely drink, that is, drink the cup of God's wrath, the cup of judgment. For I have sworn by myself, saith Jehovah, sworn by myself, Jehovah, that Bozrah shall become an astonishment, a reproach, a waste, and a curse, and all the city thereof shall be perpetual waste. All right, now that's the judgment of God against the world. Judgment of destruction. Judgment here of bringing it to an end, wickedness, nations. I have heard things from Jehovah, and an ambassador is sent among the nations, saying, gather yourselves together, come against her, that is against the Edom, and rise up to the battle. For behold, I have made thee small among the nations, and despised among men. As for thy terribleness, the pride of thy heart hath deceived thee, O thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock. Now see, that's the same thing Obadiah said. Pride of thy heart hath deceived thee, O thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock. I think that Jeremiah quoting Obadiah, some thinks the other way, Obadiah quoting Jeremiah. But I'm persuaded Obadiah was one of the earliest of the writing prophets. I believe that he was, because he wrote against Edom, Obadiah did, and Edom stands for the world and all that is in it, and that's going to be brought to ultimate destruction and judgment. He moves on, and O thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, that holdest the height of the hill, though thou shouldst make thy nest as high as the eagle, I will bring thee down from thence, saith Jehovah. Now, I don't know whether either one quoted the other, whether Obadiah quoted Jeremiah quoted Obadiah, or that there was a kind of a saying among the people of that, about pride at that time, and both of them were speaking the same source, or it was an original thought with both of them. I just don't know that. I just know that they have the same phrase, the same expression there. Will you mount on high as the eagle, I'll bring you down. And Edom shall become an astonishment. Everyone that passeth by it shall be astonished, and shall hiss at all the plagues thereof. As in the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, and the neighbor cities thereof, saith Jehovah, no man shall dwell there, neither shall any son of man sojourn there. So as God brought Sodom and Gomorrah to an end, I'm going to bring Edom to an end. That's the ultimate end of the world. That symbolizes. God will bring the world of the ungodliness to an end when the wicked are cast in the lake of fire. It burns forever. So can't you see so much of the New Testament here in the Old Testament? And you see so much of the Old Testament in the New Testament. They fit right in what God foretold in the Old Covenant over and over, represented principles on which he acts, and principles never change. So what God does back there in principle, he will do as long as time lasts. This is something that I think our brethren generally have missed. Because as a whole, our brethren have not studied the Old Testament. They kind of ridicule the idea of study. They didn't have anything for me. I'm under the new covenant, right? But you see so much, you see in the Old Testament, the same principle of God who is eternal. And he acts according to the same principle, whether in ancient times or modern times. Well, that's a lesson for me, isn't it? So I can look at the conditions of today, and I can see here's what's going to happen.
If you look back, that's what has happened, hasn't it? That's what's happened. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the pride. That's the tickets of the swelling of the Jordan against the strong habitation. For I will suddenly make them run away from it. And whoso is chosen, him will I appoint over it. For who is like me, and who will appoint me a time, and who is the shepherd that will stand before me? In other words, God will bring a shepherd against him, one that he chooses, and he's the one that will destroy the nation. And who's like him, and who's going to tell him when to do it? So that's why nobody knows when God's going to do a thing. God may not know how he's going to do it. But you can definitely know what God's going to do. If God is going to judge the wicked, a wicked nation, and ultimately he's going to bring it to an end. And when he does, it'll be a fiery end. It'll be a terrible end. So that's the destined lot of all nations that forget God. That's it. What did that psalmist say there? At the end of them that forget God, I quote 100 times in the past of it. All right. Now then, that's Eden. Have any question over it? Right, now he moves up to Kedar. Now, Kedar was a town out here, out here a little bit east and south of Damascus. Like right here in this Arabian desert, right on the border of the desert there. Now, it was not necessarily a nation or a kingdom. It was primarily made up of tribes or clans ruled over by sheikhs. But even these are not going to escape the judgment of God. If they left God out of their thinking and needed judgment, God would judge them. So Kedar stands in for those tribes, desert tribes, ruled over by the sheikhs, who didn't even have walled cities. They thought that by their own wisdom they could hide here and yonder and escape anything. You know what it said about them, and we'll probably have to stop there. Of Kedar and the kingdoms of Hazor, who Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, smote. Thus saith Jehovah, and he'll probably wrote that later when this happened. Thus saith Jehovah, arise ye, go up to Kedar, and destroy the children of the east. Their tents and their flocks shall they take, and I know they dwelt in tents. They shall carry away for themselves the curtains of the tents, and all their vessels and their camels, and they shall cry unto them terror on every side. So here the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, were so surrounding them there that they'll be crying out and shouting terror on every side as they're being destroyed by Babylonians. Flee ye, wander far off, dwell in the depths, O ye inhabitants of Hazor, saith Jehovah, for Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, hath taken counsel against you, and hath conceived a purpose against you. It's God's purpose. God's the one that's done it. God's the one that's sending Nebuchadnezzar. He's spoken of in Ezekiel as a sword in the hand of Jehovah. So the nations, and you remember that Jesus to rule them with a rod of iron. Out of his mouth shall proceed a sharp two-edged sword. Ready shall smite the nations. Revelation. So God is in control, ruling through Jesus Christ, who rules the nations with a rod of iron. They have a sword in his hand to destroy another nation. A purpose against you. Arise, get you up unto a nation that is at ease, that he called here to Nebuchadnezzar, come up against the people of Kedar. At ease that dwelleth without care, saith Jehovah. There are neither gates nor bars that dwell alone. Now these tribes felt so secure in their ability to escape this place and yonder, they didn't build walled cities. They dwelt in their tents. And that camel shall be a booty, and the multitude of that cattle is spoil. And I will scatter unto all winds them that have the corners of their hair cut off.
That means some kind of a sign of a pagan religion, whatever it might have been, which I'm not sure. And I will bring them calamity, bring that calamity from every side of them, saith Jehovah. And Hazor shall be a dwelling place of jackals and desolation forever. No man shall dwell there, neither shall any son of man sojourn therein. Alright, so now then, not only the cities are going to be destroyed, but these tribes, clans, ruled over by sheikhs who live their life without God and a plunder and robbery and all that, God's going to judge and bring them to an end. They'll come to an end also. The picture of these judgments are terrible, aren't they? Judgment is always terrible. When God brings a judgment against the people, there's always a terrible moment, a terrible thing, a terrible time. There's always a righteous judgment. He never destroys a nation, a clan, or a people until that people has reached the point it's no longer fit to live. That's always been true. Always there comes a time when a nation has reached the point it's no longer justified in leaving it alive, and so God removes it. When did that nation reach that point? I don't know. Only God knows that. When will they reach the point in this nation? I don't know. Why? I don't know the hearts of the people and the influence of people for good in the land. You never get any impression of anything good from the television program. Everything on there is of immorality and corruptness and all that. That's all you hear there. But the people I know and you know and we associate with are solid. They're good people. And they're wielding influence for good. So when God sees the time come that the salt is gone and the nation are no longer fit to live, that's when the judgment will come. I mentioned this many times. Over there in Revelation, you hear the seven trumpets. Trumpets warn. The seven bowls of wrath. The bowls of wrath are judgments of finality. They're final judgments, plural, upon whatever is being judged. So think about that. I think the trumpets are sounding now. I think now for the last 25 years we've been hearing the trumpets sound. I think we're just a little bit nearer the bowl of wrath. Or just a little bit more of our condoning wickedness and the things that our people in high office are teaching, contending for and standing for, and the things that they stand against which are good. Now, how long is that going to last? I don't know. And when the time comes, if there's not enough salt to counteract that, judgment is going to hit. That's not a prophecy. That's simply a statement, a fact based on the Bible, on the way God has always done. And he said, I don't change. I, Jehovah, change not. So we can look for something, maybe not in your lifetime of mine, or maybe in my lifetime of yours. It's on its way. Well, let's leave it there. Come next to Elam, then Elam, and after Elam, we have one other there. The Babylonian next to him. All right. Pastor is